So we're going to Michigan right after the holidays to see Amanda's family. Mm-hmm. And because of like scheduling, Amanda and the kids are flying first thing in the morning on Sunday morning, but I have to be here for church. And so I am flying by myself that afternoon. And I know that it's not actually getting bumped up to first class, but it feels
a little like
I'm getting bumped up to first class.
Yeah.
I'm going to have
flying
like
alone.
3 hours. They're going to be in the air. They're like, we're having a little technical delay. I'm going to take your time. Circle the airport as many times as you need, sir.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Elisa McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Excellent. We have a treat in studio.
Ooh, I like treats.
Yes, from a listener, from Rich Hout. Here.
All right. We know Rich.
He gave us a treat for the podcast of fruitcake.
All right. I'm excited about this.
Yes.
Patrick,
I'm
skeptical.
I'm a little apprehensive. I like Rich. But I'm apprehensive about the fruitcake.
Just look at all the ingredients that are in it. How could it possibly be bad?
There's a lot of fruit in there.
There's a lot of fruit. How could it be bad?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
It's not like
I feel like I said something bad about fruitcake in the past episode, and this is why this is happening. But I love having my preconceived notions challenged.
There you go.
Me too.
Be open to new experiences. I love it.
And this is very sweet.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so, we haven't tasted it yet. We don't know how sweet it is.
It might be poisoned.
This could be.
Right.
My fruitcake will take you down, you anti-fruitcakers.
So Rich writes to us, and he wrote a very lovely letter. I'm not going to read all of it, Rich, but thank you so much. Beyond Sunday Podcasters, in response to episode 166, which I believe is last week's, please accept this humble gift, a sample size of my mother's Christmas cake. I sincerely hope that you will enjoy it. And he talks about the significance of this cake to his family and how he makes it every year. To kind of remember kind of the the memories he had growing up of the cake.
Wow.
And we also got the recipe here on how to make it ourselves.
Oh, so cool.
We are not going to give this out on the air.
We will not.
This is not unless a proprietary
Rich wants to
recipe.
It. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. If Rich wants us to, Rich, let us know and we'll put it on the website. We can share that.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We are going to pause this because nobody wants to hear us eat.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure. I don't want to eat. Yeah. I want to take these headphones off so I don't hear you eat.
Okay, fair enough.
And then we'll come back and we'll give our brief review of Rich's fruitcake.
All right.
Okay.
I'm game.
Pausing it. Okay, we're back. Rich, we tried the fruitcake, and now we'll tell you what we think here.
I'm going on record. This is delicious. I'm still eating it as we speak.
He is actually eating it. Yeah. So even though we expressly asked him not to continue eating it.
That nobody wants to hear you eat on a podcast.
Nobody's hearing me eat. It's delicious. Rich, thank you for the gift. Thank you for the recipe. I'm sure that I will never be able to replicate it, but this is delicious. Thank you very much.
Okay. Elise, what do you think?
So actually, I will say this is the best fruitcake I've ever had.
I agree.
How many fruitcakes have you had?
I have had more than you might think for somebody who stated that they did not like fruitcake.
Maybe single digits for me, but
definitely. But like
Patrick
eight?
Had at least one on a previous episode of Beyond Sunday.
And it was horrible. And this is much better.
Hopefully the last one somebody didn't bake for us.
No, it did not.
Okay,
no.
Maybe
Amazon baked that one for us.
The bread is really delicious.
Yes.
I think my only hang up is just about texture of like the little fruit pieces in it. But is not specific just to fruitcake.
Right. That's just like your thing.
Yeah.
You don't like
I don't like a little like.
Yeah.
But it tastes really good.
Yeah.
So.
It's got like that little hint of cinnamon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm not mad at it.
Flavor's on point. Mm-hmm. If I was going to eat a fruitcake, this would be the one I would want. So thank you, Rich.
But Patrick's probably not going to eat a fruitcake.
But I probably still am going to be team no fruitcake for me.
That's right. Rich, if you ever want to bake us another fruitcake, just send it straight to me.
Yes. We have half of this left. Pastor David is going home
with it. It's my lunch. It's great.
He won it in our contest.
Woo!
Yes.
Right. Also, based
Victory's
on this,
mine.
If you have any other recipes you want to try out on us.
Oh, sure.
For sure. Any listener.
Send them on.
You want to give us a baked good, we are in.
Family favorites or, new trial. We'll be your test balloon. That's no problem. I'll gladly be your guinea pig for whatever sweet treats you have.
Yes, but thank you, Rich, for sharing a little bit of kind of your family memories with us. We really do appreciate
the spirit of the season embodied in a cake. I love it.
All right, I got some news before we get into our main story.
Sorry, this is going to be loud as I try
to
move the fruitcake off of our table.
Okay, move the fruitcake off the table.
There we go. Otherwise, I'm going to keep eating it, so I had to get out of reach.
All right, sometimes there's a headline out there that you just want to know more about, right? That just enchants you.
That doesn't happen to me that often.
This is one of those ones. Camels enhanced with Botox barred from Saudi beauty contest.
I'm sorry, what?
So they weren't born this way?
I see what you did there. Right. That was a little music pun. I like it.
Yeah. Saudi Arabian authorities have carried out the biggest crackdown on camel beauty contestants, disqualifying more than 40 enhanced camels from the annual beauty pageant.
Hold on. Back up. Camel beauty pageants?
Yeah, it's a camel beauty pageant.
You think they got barred from a regular beauty pageant?
I was confused.
Because of the Botox? Like, wait a minute. These aren't people. Worry.
Listen.
It gets better. It gets better.
I don't know what happens in Saudi Arabia, all right? Yeah. I don't know.
So, one, this beauty pageant is a month long.
Month long, okay.
Wow. It's a month long festival.
So this is like Esther and Xerxes. Like, oh, yeah. Camel this edition.
The winning camel becomes the queen of Saudi Arabia.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
She's a good storyteller?
There is $66 million in prize money.
Wow. Okay.
I don't think it's. I'm not sure it's winner take all. Oh, you know, okay. Maybe like if you win the swimsuit competition.
Yeah.
There's a prize.
The talent portion.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
What's that part when they have to answer questions? It's like the Q&A or
the comedy portion.
Sure. Yeah. It's, you know, it's April 20th. It's the getting to know you. Yeah. Yeah.
Just in light jacket.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So Botox injections, facelifts, and other cosmetic. Alterations to make
cosmic
the camels
alterations.
More attractive.
This is your camel sign.
Are strictly prohibited.
Sure. As well they should be. It should be a fair ground for all camels.
I just have a question. Maybe I missed this blip in human history, but when did we decide that camels are attractive?
and decided $66 million needs to go behind figuring out which camels are the prettiest?
I mean, so, okay. This is not the same thing, but we do have like
the Westminster Dog Show.
Okay, that's a better example. Yeah, we have the Westminster.
What were you going to say?
What was your go-to?
I was going to say Westminster Dog Show. That's I was thinking like state fairs where you get all the bulls in the room or you get all the sheep and you're like, you know, they're basically being paraded around as the prize winning sheep. I mean, we might not call it a beauty pageant, that's basically what it is.
Okay.
It's not like the sheep has a skill that they're demonstrating to become the best looking sheep? That's what it is.
Yeah.
You don't want to have the sheep with Botox and, you know.
I don't want to eat a sheep filled with Botox.
Some surgeries, you know, to make it look more attractive. You don't want that.
No, I don't. Yep.
You know, when I think of an attractive camel, I like the, you know, fresh out of the shower look, you know, like.
Wow.
All natural, baby. Yes.
Okay. We're getting a little too personal for my comfort. I think we have something else to talk about today, right? Really? Anything else?
Yeah.
Go ahead. What camel pun do you have? What are you sitting on for us? Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. There's nothing, you know, something with a hump, but, you know, that would not be appropriate.
Yeah, we'd have to bleep that out. So. All right.
Yeah. This is amazing. One, that it exists.
It's a thing.
And two, that people are cheating at it.
Sure.
Do we have any pictures of the beautiful camels?
I can show you a picture of a camel. What do you think of,
I will say,
what do you think of these fine ladies?
If there's $66 million on the line, are we really that surprised that people are cheating in it?
That's very true.
I mean, yeah.
They do have like very long eyelashes. I'll give them that.
Okay. Sure.
She says that she bats her eyelashes.
What else am I supposed to say about these camels? It's a freaking camel.
They've got a big eyelash.
Yeah. I mean, they look...
Camels are not an unattractive animal.
Kind. They look kind.
Yeah.
If you look at them from the face.
Where else, which other direction would you look
at them? I don't
know.
I'm just like, I think that's their best side, is their face.
Sure. Yeah.
You don't want to look at their drama derriere.
Yeah.
There it is. I knew he was sitting on one.
Oh, that was a good one. I just came up with that.
Uh-huh. Sure he did. He came up with that at 3 in the morning.
Well, while you were talking about the eyelashes, I was like, dromedary, what do I got? What do I got? What do I got? So.
That's because he couldn't think of Bactrian, so he had to come up with dromedary.
Mm. Yes. There you go. Camel beauty pageants.
It's a thing.
So, yeah.
Is this happening now? Is this like a holiday tradition?
I think it's going on right now.
All right.
Yeah.
How can we...
May your Yuletides
be bright.
Can we report
from the camel beauty pageant next year?
Ooh,
can that be a goal?
So we've got to go to the, Sasquatch Festival?
Yes.
No.
And we've got to meet the gymnast, whose name is escaping
Simone
me.
Biles.
Simone Biles. Yeah. Right, we got to do that. And we got to go to Saudi Arabia for the Camel Festival.
We need to do there some crowdfunding.
Yeah, because Simone Biles is the only one that's maybe in the budget, because she's like 2 minutes away from here.
Right.
And even then, I'm pretty sure it's going to take more than we've got to get her on the show.
Right. You probably have to trick her into an interview.
I could do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can pull off a really good Bob Costas impersonation.
Really?
Over the phone? Sure. Anybody can do it. He's a Neverman.
Let's hear it.
I'm doing it right now. I'm Bob Costas.
Hi, I'm Bob Costas.
Can you tell me I'm not?
Right.
Fair enough. As long as you're not eating.
Yeah. I think Bob Costas would eat on a phone call. Not on an interview. He's a classy guy, but on a phone call.
All right. Before we head into our main story, I do have a Christmas tradition from around the world for you to try at home.
Okay.
Since we're in the Advent / Christmas season, depending on who you ask.
Are we going to admit our animals into beauty contests? Is that our new Christmas tradition?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. As long as, look, no fakey fakes.
Right. Okay?
No fakey fakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We've talked about Christmas traditions from around the world.
We have.
But every year I Google just to look at them, and I just love them so much.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is from the Czech Republic, something that you can maybe incorporate to your family's tradition this Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
On Christmas Eve, unmarried Czech women, so hey, this goes along with our single ladies podcast.
There you go. This is getting better already.
Yes. Right.
They stand with their back to the door and toss one of their shoes over their shoulder.
Sure.
Okay. If it lands with the toe facing the door, means you'll be married within the year.
Oh,
that's a quick turnaround.
Heel facing, but by New Year's. Like, you know, you have 1 year to get this all put together.
Sure. I mean, that's still okay.
Still, you got to meet him. You got to get engaged. You got to plan a wedding. That's a lot.
A lot going on. Yeah.
If it lands with the heel facing, if it lands with the you start planning the wedding immediately.
Right.
That's what I assume.
Yeah. And just wait for the dude to show up.
Yeah. If it lands with the heel facing the door, you're in for another year of singleness. Sorry, ladies.
Mm.
Yeah.
That is sad.
Yeah, another year of eating ice cream on Friday nights. You know, that's just the way it is.
Ice cream on Friday nights.
Wait, all right, are we not supposed to
do that?
I was gonna say, are we not supposed to eat ice cream on Friday nights if we're not single?
You do that when you're single and when you're married. Those are the two times you do those things.
Right. That's all the time.
Your entire life.
Well, when you're dating, you know, that's
when you don't eat ice cream.
You're still trying to impress other people and pretend like you don't do those things.
I don't eat ice cream in my bed.
I am secure and happy in my marriage, but if someone were trying to impress me, ice cream on a Friday night, game on. Yeah. Way to go.
I don't sit in my pajamas immediately when I get home.
Yeah.
Watching reality TV. That's definitely not what I do.
Ink Master on repeat.
All right. So we are going to talk about.
Hey, we need to check in on the Yavel goat, too.
Yes.
Yavel goat, we need to find out about that.
It's a Yavel goat.
It's like a Norwegian thing, I think. Scandinavian, somewhere. But it's a giant goat made out of straw, wood, something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And every year people try to set it on fire. And so it's like a big thing of, are they going to succeed? And are they going to burn it down or not?
Sure.
Like the point is not to set it on fire, but
some people are trying to keep it from being set on fire, and some people are trying to set it on fire.
That sounds
but
fun.
It's not like capture the flag. Like it's not a game where it's like they're
kind
on
of
team.
Is.
Oh,
it's kind of legit.
Like
they also sometimes.
It's a thing. And like this is like a part of our tradition, but then also people.
Cooligans out there.
Want to try to burn it down. Yeah. It's not the intention, but that's what they try to do.
And also, sometimes there's a decoy goat.
Sometimes there's
a fake Yavel goat.
Yeah, they burn that one down like, ah!
It's actually a camel with Botox.
they bring out the real one.
Well, I don't want a camel with Botox to be set on fire. That'd be sad.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
the camel did not choose the Botox, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so this is a word that's been a buzzword amongst Christendom over the last couple years.
Okay.
Perhaps you've heard it by the word called deconstruction.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Not just destruction, but deconstruction.
That's true. Not just any word that starts with D.
Right.
Because like normally,
if
you think about the opposite of construction, you would think of destruction.
Okay.
Right?
But it's deconstruction.
So you're, it's different.
It is.
Constructing backwards.
Right. Well, okay. So if I'm destroying something, I'm just knocking it to bits and I don't care what's saved and what's not. If I'm deconstructing something, I'm taking it apart piece by piece.
Reverse engineering.
Yeah, carefully examining each part. Anyway, we'll get into that, but it matters.
Yeah, I agree.
It wasn't just me pointing out words. All right, guys, listen.
All right, so deconstruction, in terms of faith, is that careful re-examination of previously held beliefs and theology and kind of rebuilding faith on top from there.
Yeah.
Of what was once held true, maybe not quite in the exact same way as we kind of go through a deconstruction period. We're using an article from Relevant as a jumping off point.
All right.
But I think we're also going to just free flow this.
Yeah.
All right.
As per usual.
This is by Relevant staff too. I guess a team of people wrote this one. Hmm. And our friends over at Relevant.
Yeah. But all the best things are created by committees. So we
It's funny. My wife the other day said, like, I have an idea for your podcast. And I can't remember what she said. But she said, I'm going to send it to Relevant. So that we pick up on it. Yes.
She's very intelligent. Sorry, this is another camel joke. Have you ever heard that a camel is just a horse designed by committee?
Is that a joke?
Yeah. Because like
they had a couple bumps in the road.
But like if you tried to design a horse by committee, it would come out looking like a camel.
Yeah, because everybody's got their own opinion.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was a good joke,
I feel
right?
Like a camel is generous.
Man, you guys are just judgy today. I don't know what's.
You say that like every week.
Yeah. We can't help you find a Christmas
Listen,
sweater.
I'm going to go back over here. I'm going to eat some more fruitcake, and you all can do whatever you want to do. That's fine.
Oh, David's in the corner eating his fruitcake and crying.
I'm going to be very happy with my fruitcake.
Just another Wednesday.
All right. The headline, if you're looking to read this article yourself, is deconstruction doesn't mean you're losing your faith.
Okay. I like it.
Okay, so first we're going to talk about this idea from Mike McHargy. Otherwise known
That's
as,
definitely how it's pronounced. Yep.
Yeah. Science Mike.
Science Mike, okay.
Yes. So he has a journey that he's blogged about and his podcast about. He's a Christian turned atheist turned follower of Jesus. So that's a lot.
Whoa.
You know, big, yeah, okay. big. That's a pretty big swings.
And he no longer calls himself a Christian, but calls himself a follower of Jesus.
That's according to this article. That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
All right. So I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So he started blogging about this experience, mm-hmm. podcast about experience, and he said, in response, he's received hundreds of people a month saying, I'm experiencing this too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This idea of, I have gone through a period of taking the way I see the world through my Christian point of view and reshifting, reshaping, and reexamining everything. And sometimes that means I'm no longer a Christian on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it means I am no longer my denomination on the other end.
Sure.
Sometimes it means I've done it and it built it and it looks kind of the same.
Sometimes it means you found out you should have been a Lutheran all along. There it is. Welcome to the club, right. Science Mike. Yeah. Come yeah. join the party.
So
the water's fine.
So why does this matter? And first I got some stats for us.
For Science Mike or for us?
This is from Science Mike.
No, I said, why does this matter? Does it matter to Science Mike or does
well,
it matter?
Well, obviously it matters to Science Mike because he's gone through this journey. Why does it matter to our podcast to listeners okay. or to us? Even if you've never experience this yourself. Sociologists will tell us that somewhere around 43-45% of people will go through a major faith transition at some point in their life.
Only 43?
That's almost half.
Yeah, but I feel like that number should be higher. More of us should be going through major faith transitions. I feel like that should be a bigger deal for us. All right, anyway, yeah. Continue.
Okay. A major faith transition at some point in their life. And that's any faith transition. So one Christian denomination to another denomination.
Okay.
Belief to atheism.
Okay.
Or secularism or atheism to a form of religiosity. So all
okay.
those could...
If we're defining that as a faith transition. Okay. I get the number now.
How would you define a faith?
I was just imagining like going through some faith crisis that causes you to reevaluate your faith and go through it like a period of transition where I believed one thing and now I came out the other side believing something different. And I feel like more of us should be going through that experience.
Should be, but I don't think
that's
that
fair.
We
that's
do.
Fair.
Yeah.
I think this is a marked difference
yeah,
on
I
the other
that.
End
okay.
of like I have shifted my denomination,
yeah.
my faith itself
right.
Yeah. in some way. Okay.
So 43%. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's a number that in some ways gets a little more interesting when you start to pull it apart too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess if you've not read the article?
Which would be David.
That's
so.
Fine. I'll play this guessing right. game. I'm okay. fine with that.
Which faith denomination, it's Christian, has the least likely to experience a faith transition?
Catholic.
You're close-ish.
Yeah. Episcopalian?
I think you're closest, not in the style or belief system, but kind of in some of the religiosity.
Yeah.
That would be the
evangelicalism.
The Southern Baptist. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Southern Baptism. That is a very rigid faith
sure.
Or theology
mm-hmm.
That they kind of have a pretty clear black and white on just about every theological discussion you could have. They've got an answer.
Yep. Right, wrong, or otherwise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They've got it.
Yeah, the ELCA has a little bit more room for gray.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who are more conservative would say, yeah, but we're a little bit more black and white, but in the opposite direction maybe
sure.
of the
yeah.
yep. of the Southern Baptists. But I think that there is more room for theological gray.
Mm-hmm.
At least ideally there is.
In theory, yeah.
Yeah. All right. But for the Southern Baptists, when they do go through a faith transition, it's almost entirely a dramatic one.
Sure.
It almost always leads to faith to no faith.
Yeah.
Not faith and then a reshaping of yeah. what faith
right.
is.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? You say it makes sense.
I think it makes sense because I think when you hold something to that level of kind of almost idolatry, if you mm-hmm. will. I mean, mm-hmm. and I don't mean their faith being the idolatry, but, you know, holding a particular set of beliefs to that idolatry, that when that crumbles, it's really hard to see anything within that for value.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think if you enter into a faith, I mean, for me, right, I grew up in a Lutheran church, and so I was always taught to be asking questions and to be looking at things from different sides. And so when one thing falls apart for me, it's easy for me to shift and, you know, look at it from a different direction. I'm used to that. But if I've always said this is the right answer, mm-hmm. and that, you know, falls apart in one way or another for me, it's a whole lot harder to see through the rubble of that to find a new way to look at it, because I'm not trained in how to do that. I'm not mm-hmm. used to that perspective. And so it's more life altering for me in that particular experience, even if we're having the same experience, right? Myself and a Southern Baptist are seeing the same information, having the same challenge, but because I'm used to looking at things from different directions and they might not be, it can be a much less dramatic shift for me than it would be for them.
Yeah.
I also think because of some of the rigidity of that belief system, too, these people can find themselves sort of aggressively outcast from their communities. So
Absolutely.
It's not just the space of like, well, I don't really know anymore. I'm going to try and sit with this and figure it out.
Sure, yeah.
Because you no longer have a community.
That's
you
a great
are
point.
Not welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if every belief system is like built and brick and one starts to crumble or fracture, mm-hmm. it can lead to a fracturing of like everything else. Like
yeah.
one thing is built off another thing. So, I mean, if you have like part of your faith system is built off biblical literacy and you're coming across passages like in the Old Testament or the New Testament that are like, I think this is weird or different and I'm not sure I fully can get behind this. And then all of a sudden, then you're hit with, but if this isn't true,
right.
Can I believe any of it?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then it leads. Or this biblical literacy of like, this is what the Bible clearly, you know, in sometimes in my clearly communicates about homosexuality. And then somebody in your family or yourself mm-hmm. comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, how do I reconcile this yeah. with a very black and white when I'm entering a gray space? It's really
yeah.
difficult and
yep.
really tough.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if the fence walls are high, they may keep you in. But when you get over, it's hard to get back in.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So
that was a nice metaphor.
Is. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that actually is in the article here. So.
But it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it was from Science Mike.
Right.
All right. So let's get into maybe the idea of like, what is then deconstruction?
Yeah.
And conveniently enough, I think we actually started Beyond Sunday with a podcast similar to a deconstruction-y feel.
Mm-hmm.
We did that?
Did we?
Well, Elise wasn't here.
Right. We did
so
that?
I don't know why you're looking at her.
Right. He's like, what?
I don't know. It seemed like the natural place to look.
Right.
All right. So say more about that. What was our deconstruction you feel?
So we talked about a movie called mm-hmm. Moneyball.
I remember that.
Okay.
That was your first podcast episode?
That was our first podcast. So we talked about a movie called Moneyball.
Uh-huh.
Funny enough, my wife thought it was called Monkeyball.
Awesome.
So we watched it. She was very disappointed.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
No monkeys were showing up to play baseball.
She was imagining like the Air Bud of baseball.
And no,
I love
she
this.
Wanted like a feel-good zoo movie.
Yes. When do the monkeys get here? Right. This is just Brad Pitt making behind-the-scenes decisions.
Yeah.
So if you've never seen Moneyball, it was kind of reducing baseball and kind of the mystery and to baseball of like what makes a good hitter, what makes
right.
a good pitcher, to math.
Statistics.
It's
a great movie.
Math into sports or into an activity. Oh, that's fun, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But like it was like the Oakland A's, this team was saying, like, how can we just find guys who have the best on base percentage? Like
right.
all that matters is do they get on base?
Right.
Their stance, their home run percentage, that doesn't matter at all. It's just like playing the odds.
Yeah.
And so they built a team and traded for and signed guys that just get on base. Who weren't big names.
Yep.
And they went from bottom of the league to, they didn't make the World Series, but they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know,
huh.
So a huge swing
yep.
in this thing. And so I think our first podcast, we kind of talked about like, sometimes we have this in kind of like faith matters too. Like sometimes we have mm-hmm. the mystery of faith, but
mm-hmm.
we want to reduce that to easy answers,
sure.
to math in a sense
yeah.
of like, this is spelt out clearly in scripture or clearly in theology. So we land on, this is what it means.
Mm-hmm.
So something like what happens in communion, which I think there's a lot of mystery
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
interest in, like, there should be an aspect of, I'm not entirely sure
yeah.
what's really going on there spiritually, physically, for me and for the congregation around me. But when we reduce that to, it's obviously blank,
yeah.
that removes that mystery from there. Does that make
Unless
sense?
We're yeah. saying it's obviously mystery.
Sure.
It's obviously a mystery.
Yes.
Come back next Sunday for more tidbits.
That's what I'm here for.
Right.
You're welcome, world.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a great point. And we can apply that to a lot of different aspects of our faith, right? Yeah. We can think about communion that way. We can look at how we read scripture that way, or even how we read a particular story, right? I mean, one of the great gifts that we've been trying to do as we go through the Bible series, right, is looking at particular pieces of scripture and saying, how do we look at this in a different way? And how do we take out some of the baggage that we've perhaps brought to this story, knowingly or unknowingly, and say there might be another way for us to witness how God is working in the midst of this. Mm-hmm. And one of the helpful things for me to think about that is to be looking at that from different cultural perspectives or hearing stories from people who have a different background than I do. That's a way that we can quickly deconstruct some of our own beliefs, is just by listening to people whose beliefs are different than us, but who come from a different background than us. Mm-hmm. And how do they arrive at their belief? Because even if our belief is the same at the top, right, if we're talking about the bricks that built up, if their bricks are different than my bricks, maybe there's a weakness in my brick, or maybe there's something in my brick that doesn't need to be there. Maybe there's something from theirs that can fill that gap for me.
Yeah, there's a really great quote, I think, by a friar in this article. Hopefully I'm not jumping too far ahead. But he says something to the effect of that the ancient understanding of faith is that there's room for darkness, right? And for unknowns. And that was sort of the understanding that you entered into faith with, is that you don't have all the answers and you have to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think that you are entitled to certainty, or that there is an absolute right and an absolute wrong for every situation, then you've already destroyed what it means to have faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially, I think sometimes we land on, like, I'm certain of these things because people 1,000 years ago figured it out, and we're just running that train from here, you know, or like, or 500 years, whenever, you know, my denomination was founded and we got it right.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, every other denomination was like, I don't know how they messed it all up, but we got it right and we're good, you know, like, except for all the times we keep splintering, but those people get it wrong. Or unless I splintered with them,
then we got it right.
And so I think deconstruction is that, like, kind of like very intentional, like we've discussed, taking these elements of our faith and revisioning them, and not solely relying on a theology we were kind of brought into as children or stepped into as kids, and that, you know, somebody else did the hard work of figuring out the math for us. And we're saying, okay, and now it's time to re-embrace the mystery before we land on anything else. So let me ask you this before we keep on. Have you had a period of faith deconstruction?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So that was fun. All right, what's our next game?
We all agree. Yeah.
So I know this, Elise and I landed in the ELCA and this church from different denominational
backgrounds.
Finally
got it right. Congratulations. Yeah. Welcome home.
Yes. So for us, we were not raised. I was raised Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Elise Presbyterian.
Presbyterian, yeah.
So for us, even like a denominational shift like this is a form of deconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Elise, let me ask you, like, what brought you to this church or this denomination at this time?
So I think there were always some trappings of so Presbyterian, for those who may not be familiar, it tends to be a little bit more conservative, I think, than Lutheranism. Not quite all the way into like Southern Baptist tradition, but
depends on which branch of Presbyterianism you're a part of.
Does, yeah, for sure. Yeah, but it's sort of a jumping off point into that. So there were always trappings of that, that even as an adolescent, I was kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm not sure how much it matters. Like, I know that I believe like the fundamentals, so I'm here, you know. But as an adult,
it would make you a fundamentalist, wouldn't it?
No.
Well, you put the fun in it.
Right. So. Put the fun in fundamentals. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so I went through an experience in Bible college that very nearly caused my faith to be deconstructed all the way. And so I had a period of not attending church for a few years after that, and just kind of settling and saying, all right, I see, you know, X, Y, and Z that are extremely harmful in this faith, but in this faith tradition. On the other side of that, I have A, B, C that I think are very important and very valuable. And how can I marry those two? You know, how can I reconcile, you know, some of this that I think is, you know, objectively bad with that which I think is objectively good, you know? And so I had that sort of transition and ended up here. And I remember the first day that we visited here, we talked about the environment and I was just openly weeping.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. So that was fun. But
we talked about like the environment, like
I think we like
trees and stuff.
Yeah. Like we prayed for like the, you know,
yeah,
I don't know, like environmental responsibility and stuff. And I was like, oh, cool. They care. Like, good like, for us. It's right. an issue. Like, it's, yeah. So that was, you know, the beginning of that experience, I guess, of coming back.
Yeah, yeah. So. Nice. I love it. Thanks
yeah.
for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. You want to share your faith deconstruction journey?
Yeah, I mean, so in all honesty, right, a major piece of especially early seminary, but also my undergrad was professors who set out to very intentionally help you deconstruct your theology and your faith. Because if their mindset is, right, if we're preparing you to go and work in the church, you need to understand what's behind the things that you believe. Like, we can't just let you continue to move forward thinking that, oh, I've got this house of cards and it's perfectly stable, only to discover 5 years into ministry that it's a house of cards, right? Mm-hmm. We need you to take that apart and build it up fresh. So a lot of my seminary classes and undergrad classes were professors who, devoted Christians themselves, would take the opposite stance and just challenge you to continue to think about things in a different way. And, you know, that process allowed me to go back and look at the ways that the church has throughout history deconstructed and reconstructed its faith, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, we deconstructed the faith to say, okay, slavery should not be a part of what we teach anymore. And right and now we're in the midst of a process of deconstructing what does it really mean to be an anti-racist community and a community that's going to stand not just, say, nice platitudes about, you know, people of different backgrounds, but we're going to actually actively work for the equality and the betterment of all people, right? What does that mean for us? And we're in the midst of that deconstruction and reconstruction phase right now. And so for me, it kind of goes back to like being a little kid, and I was the youngest in my family. And so I like to play with Legos, but my brother and sister were a lot better at playing with Legos because we're just older, right? And so I would build this stuff and I would think it was this beautiful thing. And they would come along and say like, well, if you take this apart and put this here, it's going to be stronger and it's going to be better and improving. So you need those guides along with you when you're deconstructing your faith to say like, what if you think about it in this way? What if you put in a different brick here instead of that one? This might be causing a weakness that you don't know about or a detriment that you don't know about. And that's, it's just a journey with people who have been there before, and it's a continued walk.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I will also share my story. Although I grew up a Lutheran, yeah. but the conservative branch, or a more conservative
one
branch. Because there's one that's even more conservative.
Yeah. There are actually a lot that are more conservative.
A big ones, you know, of the Lutheran church.
Did we talk about this on the podcast, that there are like 37-something different Lutheran denominations in North America?
I'm not surprised.
I learned this in a thing that I was working on recently. It was a ton. It's nuts. Nutsos. Just absolutely nuts. Anyway.
And I always
we don't need to deconstruct that. Right
and I always growing up in our church, and I worked for this church, and I came here working a called position, which means a churchy position at a summer camp, you know, a Christian Lutheran summer camp, and I left that to come work here at Lord of Life. But I always kind of felt like I'm the secret, you know, black sheep liberal of this this group. Of I'm kind of fine with the gay community. I'm fine with women in leadership. Like, those things aren't obstacles to me.
But they were obstacles.
But they were
community.
Obstacles
yeah.
to the
yeah.
community. Sure. But I have a very real inciting incident that caused me to say, like, I don't know how much longer I can work here. And that was actually after the Sandy Hook shootings, which was an awful, horrific time for our nation, for that community. And a LCMS pastor up in that community prayed at like a community vigil that was kind of an all-faiths vigil. And afterwards, the leader of our denomination, you know, bishop is what we would call in the ELCA, you know, the leader chastised him and made him apologize for doing that.
For praying at the all-faiths
yes.
service.
Because there were other faiths.
Because there were other faiths, welcome. And it's like legitimizing like all faiths, you know, are have value or whatever. And so he did, this pastor did. And that was the moment I said, I don't think I can do this much longer.
Yeah.
Like that, like that, like even, I was like, even if you have like issues with that as a denomination, you have to be able to see that community cannot just be hearing from like a pastor who cares about the people and the families that are going through an unbelievable tragedy. Hey, I'm sorry for praying for you. Like, like, I'm like, can you not even like see what that says?
Yeah.
And like, and so that was kind of the instant, and that several years later I left, but that was kind of that moment. I was like, that is, I can trace it all back there. Like that, I just can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And in that, a reshaping of how I did see women in leadership clearer or better, and I'm much more fine with it theologically, and so much more vocally supportive, or the LGBTQ community on their place in the church. You know, having being a part of a denomination that welcomes not only you can come into the building, but you can have a place,
yeah.
you know, I think matters to me.
Yeah.
And so that's part of this deconstruction.
Yeah.
And so one of the things this article will talk about is that many times, and I would maybe say the majority of the time, we enter into a phase of deconstruction. It's not intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like your experience at seminary.
Right.
It has an inciting incident, oftentimes a tragedy mm-hmm. yeah. that comes in and forces you into this deconstruction place. The article will talk about one of the women who's a writer of the sin has a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And that entered her into a, I cannot pretend that I'm fine and that these platitudes of like God has a plan for me mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
I cannot. Like, and I have to re-examine all those things. Thinking of other like life-altering things, especially if you're coming from a more conservative background of faith, you know, again, we kind of mentioned your kid comes out
mm-hmm.
or you come out mm-hmm. or come to terms with those sexuality types of things. Those can be moments of kind of very real, like, how do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And many times people have entered a deconstruction of my son came out and I decided my theology is more important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes people themselves have come out and decided my theology is more important.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's really difficult for them and their community to sure. kind of go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think those can be kind of inciting incidents of something very personal, theologically complex, or tragedy that can lead us to a deconstructive place.
Yeah. What I think is particularly challenging about that, right, is that there's a resistance to this language of deconstruction. Like, we're not speaking universally that everybody loves the opportunity to have their faith deconstructed and rebuilt. There are a lot of mm-hmm. people who would say, no, deconstruction is not faithful, and deconstructing faith is not yeah. faithful because faith is solid, and faith yep. is, you know, firm and built on the solid foundation of Jesus Christ and sure. whatever, right? Which is not wrong, but also I believe there's room for flexibility within faith, right? And so you mentioned like the parent who says, well, my faith is more important than my relationship with my son. What is most tragic for me in that moment is that parent feels like they are being faithful to the gospel of Jesus Christ
mm-hmm.
by holding firm, like in the face of the temptations of the world, I'm going to hold firm to this belief that my son is a sinner,
mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm going to tell my son that they're a sinner so that they can repent and they can believe it, right? And I don't want to just... I do a little bit. I don't want to just dismiss that,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think the importance of this is that deconstruction doesn't call us to take a wrecking ball and just destroy the entire structure of our faith. Deconstruction calls us to evaluate the pieces of our faith that are not leading us towards Jesus
mm-hmm.
and to evaluate how is our faith preventing us from getting towards Jesus, because there has always been pieces of faith or pieces of, I should say, church doctrine. There's always mm-hmm. been pieces of church teaching that have prevented us from getting to Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that this kind of, since it's often birthed in tragedy, we don't have that intentionality behind it
yeah.
of like, what about my theology, my faith, my denomination, my worship that's keeping me from falling more in love with Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I not necessarily fix, but how do I reconcile that? How mm-hmm. do I deal with that and kind of address it in a very real way? And I think that matters of how can we say like these aspects of this theology are keeping me further from Jesus, not drawing yeah. me closer. And that needs to be reexamined. Oftentimes, if it's birthed in tragedy or like in the more conservative branches of Christianity, I get over the fence. It's not necessarily about like drawing me closer to Jesus as the motivation of deconstruction. It's I just don't really like these aspects of Christianity
yeah.
and that's what I'm really deconstructing, and in the process I lose sight of Jesus
mm.
and I think that's a very real risk if there's not space and room for it and you don't have people to help walk alongside you in the midst of it that we end up with saying I hate these aspects of Christianity and then all of a sudden I just lost Christ in the
yeah.
middle of it
yep.
yeah.
And I think there's so much fear surrounding deconstruction too, right? Because there's this fear that like, well, if this piece of it is incorrect or has been presented incorrectly, then all of it's incorrect. Or
sure.
we have to throw out all of it. If, yeah. you know, if one part of the Bible is not literal, then all mm-hmm. of it is not literal,
yeah.
you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of fear about that. So I think that's why there isn't really credence given to deconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
By many faith traditions, because they I mean, ultimately, I think they want you to show up and believe what they tell you, you know?
Yeah.
That's overly critical, but...
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair critique, right? Yeah. I mean, I think there are lots of churches who say, yeah, we don't want you to come in and challenge our belief. Right. We don't want you to come in and help us think differently about something. We're here to tell you how to think. I don't think that's critical. I think they would say that honestly about themselves.
And honestly... So do I. So do we sometimes have that same belief. You know, we don't have a Q&A in the middle of the sermon, right?
Sure. Maybe we should.
Yeah, because that's not really time and space. One for logistically. You know, but like, you know, not always does even the most progressive of Christianities doesn't necessarily allow for, the most progressive Christianities doesn't necessarily equal deconstruction is healthy, and you should do that in your own faith. Land on, we think we're right, and you should fall in line with us.
Progressive or conservative, you can be just as hardline in your doctrine.
I think even as an individual going through deconstruction, there can be a lot of fear of, am I ever going to be comfortable again? Am I ever going to have this space where I can just relax into it and feel like, yeah, like this, I get this, the space gets me, you know, that kind of thing.
For sure.
And the answer, maybe no.
Maybe. But
if you start to tear down the castle, is it ever going to get rebuilt?
Yeah. I kind of think that's good, though. Kind of think long-term deconstruction is healthy.
Yeah. I mean, the interstate system of Ohio would certainly say that it is. So I think that's a part of
it. They rebuild it every spring.
Pretty much. Hey, look, all that ice came and destroyed our roads. Right. Let's rebuild it again.
Right. So apparently in Alaska, this is a fun tidbit from my trip when I went looking for Sasquatch.
Do they get the moose to repave the roads?
But apparently there's one stretch of interstate that the tide swing is so high, it's on the Turnagain Arm. The tide swing is so high that every winter it falls off into the sea, and every spring and summer they rebuild it for it to fall back off into the sea.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
there's a great metaphor there. Sisyphean. I like it. Yeah.
So let me ask, are there times or places where we've hailed its praise of deconstruction? Are there times and places where deconstruction is not healthy?
I think forcing deconstruction on someone else is not always healthy. Yeah. I think people have to have their own space and time to enter into that. I think, you know, oftentimes it is an inciting incident that brings that about. But I think if I just like stand up in someone's face and try to force deconstruction on them, I don't think that's a healthy way to bring about the opportunity. Mm-hmm. There are parts of my faith that I would prefer not to have deconstructed.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that it's unhealthy to do it. I don't know. I'm going to stop talking and think rather than thinking out loud. So.
Yeah. Alicia, you got anything? I got some thoughts. I just want to cut you off. Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking there are, you know, times where I wish maybe I was less reflective than I am, right? Yeah. So I could just kind of like, you know, float through this and not think about, wait a minute, you know, I think in some ways that would be a more peaceful existence. I really do think that deconstruction has been one of the most valuable things that's happened to me, and I don't necessarily want that process to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'm going to amend my statement to say that I think there are times when it's not pastorally advisable, but I don't know that it's ever unhealthy.
Okay.
Right? So I think there are times where, like, if someone comes to me for pastoral care, you know, after the death of a loved one or something like that, that's not the moment for me to help them deconstruct their faith, right?
Sure.
They have to move through that process and come to a place. So it's not always pastorally advisable, but if they're at that place and they're ready to do that, I don't think there's ever a bad time to do that.
Yeah. I think there can be times where we acknowledge the church has done such a bad job in the past or in the present, and we want to deconstruct it, but through selfish means and not through, I want to get rid of the clutter and get to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that can be like a, you know, Christians out there being like, I grew up in a purity culture and I really just kind of want to sleep around. So let's just get rid of all of that.
Yeah.
And that way I can just do kind of what I want.
Yeah.
And that absolves me from, you know, any kind of Christian sexual credo. Or I really just like my money. So let me absolve myself from anything in the Bible that really has to deal with that and put it into cultural context and deconstruct anything that has to do with like how we are obligated to share with the poor, things like that.
Yeah.
So I do think there are times where we enter into deconstruction through sometimes a very selfish means of like, there are aspects of this theology that affect me and I do not like that. And so I'm deconstructing that. And I don't think that that is the, I want to get rid of the dirty water and keep the baby. That's like, I want to get rid of parts of the baby, like because that make me uncomfortable, or that make my
that
life
metaphor made me uncomfortable.
that make my life harder. You know, like that's kind of like what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah. I think you know, as Christians, we find so much of our identity in the tension between two ideas, right?
Yeah.
So I think that space can be okay, you know, for a time as well to be like, I don't like this, I do not like this, but how do I reconcile me not liking this with what this is, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that can be a motivator, you know, but not, and that's not to poo-poo deconstruction, but I can poo-poo on some motivations.
Unhealthy deconstruction, yeah.
All right.
Just as there's unhealthy construction and unhealthy destruction.
When you don't build to code.
Sure, that would be unhealthy. Right. Or when you... Yeah, build the sewer line to go out your faucet or something like that. That would be unhealthy construction.
All right, so any advice?
Patrick just completely ignores me at this point.
He was talking about poo-pooing things, so.
It's a phrase.
Yeah.
Just get out of here.
Unhealthy construction, that's what that is.
Well, I will say, if you're in a place of deconstruction, whether intentionally or whether it was forced upon you by circumstance or tragedy or an intentionality, my hope is that you're doing that with community.
Yeah.
That you're still engaging with other people, expressing your doubts, your fears, your anxieties, and that your community allows for the expression of doubts and fears and anxieties. And I think if you enter into a place where you're like, I have doubts about blank, and it's immediately dismissed, covered over, or it's like, here's the math, don't you get it? You know, like, I think that isn't the healthiest place to be when you're in this place.
Yeah.
I think that will only frustrate you and sometimes lead to just walking away entirely.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not allowed to question it, anything, then maybe you'll just end up saying, I think I'm done.
Yeah. And if you're not in this area and you know you're looking for that kind of community, send us an email and we would be happy to use our wealth of resources and networks across the country. Yeah. Not so much worldwide, but at least across the country. Or at least the southeastern part of Texas. It's bigger than that. We've got to figure it out. But we'd love to help point you into the direction of a community that can help you do that.
If you're in the Woodlands, you're in Spring, Conroe, we got you.
Yeah. I can cover Columbus, Dayton, southeastern Michigan, parts of central South Carolina.
Northern South Carolina.
There you go. We've got most of South Carolina right there.
Yeah.
Coastal though, right? You know.
No, actually not coastal.
Actually, no. Yeah. We wish coastal.
I have a couple connections in coastal.
Yeah, I know a lot of people in coastal.
Oh, well,
not to brag, but
yeah, brag.
Oh, these days, coastal. Just kidding. I forgot about that.
What? Because global warming, Greenville's now on the coast.
No. Right. Remember how we prayed about the environment?
Whoops.
Not hard enough.
Look, I'm looking for some beachfront property, so let's just get on with this global warming.
All right, well, I think that's a pretty good sign that we're done with this episode. Yeah. So, hey, if you liked this episode or if you are working through some deconstruction of your own, we'd love to hear your story of that experience. You can email us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our episodes going all the way back to that very first episode about Monkey Ball.
Don't listen to it. Listen to this one.
You can find it, skip it, and then go to like number 10. That's when it started to get good. But you can find that at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.